need to change how things are done. All the rules that you guys set up, break them all down.
My moment.
Every superstar has an evolution.
I will not hesitate.
We're all in business.
We need to change how things are done.
Hi everyone and welcome to a new episode of Inside the Ropes. This is the Backlash Breakdown. That was coined by our very own Sondra. She was trying to make fun of me, but instead she came up with a good name.
No, Sondra... I knew we were going to use it. that was legitimate.
You secretly wanted to use it because you put it in my brain.
Well, yeah. I didn't want to do a Backlash rundown. We don't run down things when it comes to SmackDown, right? Like, we don't do SmackDown rundown. We don't do rundown. That's the Raw thing. That's the red brand. That's the whatever over there. Like, this is SmackDown, man.
This is SmackDown. Fuck those Raw guys. Fuck that what culture dick and that fucking American.
So true.
So, with that in mind,
what culture dicks and Americans are the worst?
They are the worst people. I can testify to that. So this is the inaugural SmackDown pay-per-view. So, obviously, we have our SmackDown correspondent, our SmackDown connoisseur, Sondra Reinstein. I was going to try and do the middle names, but I couldn't quite do it there. But before we talk about Backlash, Sondra,
yes,
there was another pretty big event this past weekend.
There was.
We both had a chance to check out UFC 203 from Cleveland, Ohio. It was the long-awaited two-year wait that we had for the debut of CM Punk in the UFC, his first UFC fight. And, it was something. Now, had you watched the Evolution of Punk series?
Yes, I've seen all of them.
Okay. Because for me, I watched all those shows, and I think UFC do those shows really well. You know, those kind of like build up shows.
Yeah, they're excellent.
But I remember, like, in the lead up to this, there was so in all the ones leading up to it, I was kind of thinking, wow, like Punk might have a shot.
Like,
I wasn't thinking he's going to go in and maul Mickey Gall or anything like that, but I thought maybe he can last a couple of rounds or something. Like, maybe, you never know. Like, he's been training for 2 years. Because as me, someone who's not that much of a UFC aficionado, I kind of, sometimes the hyperbole of a show, I take a bit too literally, maybe. Mm. And then something that Mickey Gall said on the last Evolution of Punk episode, for whatever reason, when Mickey Gall said this, I was like, nope, that's it. Punk is losing, without a doubt. And he said, I've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he's just started. And as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah, he's right. Like that's it. That's going to be, at the end of the day, the experience is going to be the deciding factor here. So Mickey Gall comes out to, "Hey, Mickey, you're so fine," which basically made me fall in love with him.
That was so delightful, wasn't it? Like, oh, I popped so hard for that song too.
So good. So he comes out looking very confident and very kind of in the zone, I want to say. And then CM Punk comes out to Cult of Personality. I really, really fucking missed that song, to be honest.
I did too. My buddy and I, because I went out to a bar with a pal of mine, and we were talking about it, like, as Mickey Gall was entering, my buddy Dave is like, I really hope he uses Cult of Personality. And I was trying not to get my hopes up. I was like, I don't know if he's going to use it. I don't know if he's going to want to use it. Like, and then Cult of Personality hit, and both of us at our table, no one else in the entire place, like, really reacted to the song. Both of us go, yes! And then, yeah, I was getting some strange looks from some creepy middle-aged men sitting at a table right near us. But whatever, it was called to personality and it was exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting. So then Punk comes out, looked very cocky to me.
Yeah,
when he was coming out, looked very cocky, typical CM Punk. And then I loved how, when he was about to go in the octagon, and he was just about to walk in, and everybody starts going mental, and he pauses and just does that kind of wrestling thing where he, like, soaks in the moment.
Yeah,
which was cool. He gets in. He fist pumps Bruce Buffer after Bruce Buffer gives him an introduction, which was a bit odd, to be honest.
Like, I thought it was funny.
Like, yeah, it was just that. But I mean, in hindsight, like, maybe that's another test that, like, you know, he wasn't really that focused, it didn't seem, on what he was doing. He was just kind of. But anyway, so he starts the fight.
Do you think it was focus, or do you think it's just like he's performing again? Like,
I think he's maybe forgetting
again and was actually like invested in what he was doing, right? Because I mean, the last while in WWE, he was so checked out. Like, he's in front of a crowd; they're all cheering for him. He's in his element.
I think he maybe thought he was performing in a different place, because this was like his MMA debut. He had never had an MMA fight in his life. And he's going in there against a guy who's 2-0. Everything's kind of on the line for him to not look, for it to not be embarrassing for him. And he's fist pumping Bruce Buffer. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying it's a huge thing. It's just something I noticed. And I was like, oh, like if that was me, and I mean, CM Punk and I are very different people in a lot of ways. But like, I don't think I think I would be more invested in the upcoming mountain that I've got to try and climb rather than like, oh, that was cool. Bruce Buffer just said my name. Fist pump. Like, that's just me. But then he starts the fight, and he goes for Mickey Gall, and Mickey Gall basically takes him down straight away. It continues for about 2 minutes with Mickey Gall just laying punches into him, cinching in the takedown, and eventually Punk taps in 2 minutes and 14 seconds. What did you think of this overall as a fight, and where do you think CM Punk sits coming out of it?
Well, it was incredibly lopsided as a fight, right? Like, I mean, CM Punk didn't really stand a chance against Mickey Gall. Like, you can say, like, anybody stands a chance to, you know, the James Ellsworth. Any man with two hands has a fighting chance, right? But, like, he really didn't. And I did watch all of the Evolution of Punk things, and you just kind of keep seeing him losing sparring matches and losing in training. And it's not that I don't respect him for what he did. I totally do. Obviously, like, mad props to him. And I mean, he says himself that the goal when he started, you know, doing MMA wasn't necessarily I'm going to debut in UFC, but the opportunity came up, and who would say no to that, right? Like, who would say no to that kind of money and that kind of prestige and everything surrounding it? And I understand why Dana White made the offer to CM Punk, because it's money, right? Like, wrestling people like us are talking about UFC, and a lot of that is down to CM Punk. And, but I mean, as far as the fight, like, when I made plans to go out and see it, I was like, so you want to go watch the CM Punk beatdown with me? Because I really, going into it, I didn't expect it to last long, and it didn't last long. Like, he actually, CM Punk lasted longer in the fight than I thought that he would, because especially after, I think Mickey Gall got a guillotine on him, and CM Punk managed to actually kind of get away from it. He managed to wriggle out of a submission attempt, and, you know, props to him. Obviously, he's been training. He's been doing stuff. He's been working, but he's only been doing this for 2 years, and he started from the very beginning. And another thing is, he hasn't even been training continuously for those 2 years, right? Because he had injuries and things that kind of set him back. So, I mean, all of that taken into account, I didn't think he was going to win. He seemed to really believe that he was going to win. I did watch the post-fight interview, and he was just wrecked. Like, he was just so disappointed and so upset, and like, I felt bad for the guy, because he's like, I just really thought I was going to win. And he started crying when they brought up AJ. Like, what did your wife say? Because she was kind of hesitant about you doing this. And, you know, because everything's been documented. The whole journey has been documented. So you've seen AJ be like, I just don't want to see you get hit. And, you know, being very supporting and very supportive of him. And he, like, this is just so not what you think of when you think CM Punk, right? Like, he had to set the microphone down. He's like, you guys are making me cry, you bastards. And then, like, through tears, he's like, she just said she was proud of me. And I was just like, oh, I just want to give you a hug.
It's interesting, because I put a thing out on my own Facebook where I meant it. It is easy to take the piss out of him or to make fun of him, but, like, it does take balls to do what he did and to get in there. And the thing is, I think that you've got to be very clear in what you say here. Was this a bit of an embarrassment? Yes, it was. But I think it was an embarrassment for UFC rather than CM Punk.
Yeah, I don't think CM Punk comes out of it looking like a fool, really. Because what else was going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Now, something that's interesting. So, yeah, I'm a big CM Punk fan, and I think it took a lot of balls for him to get in there and do that. And I really felt for him when, you know, you saw his face when he lost. Like, I really did. But what's interesting is I listen to Wrestling Observer Radio quite a lot, and one of the contributors to that is Filthy Tom Lawler, who's a UFC fighter. Mm-hmm. And the post UFC 203 audio that those three guys did is really, really interesting, because Tom Lawler is appalled that this was able to take place. And I was intrigued by just listening to him, because we're listening to a fighter from his perspective, listening to him talk about how he felt about this. And he was like, you know, people talking about how there's more eyes coming to UFC. And he said, but he thinks that it's actually hindering UFC, because he said, you've got a guy who, CM Punk, has no sports background whatsoever, mm-hmm. no fighting background whatsoever, and he's able to get in an octagon with no experience. And for him as a fighter, like, he's, now whether we as we are not, he's going to see that as he's taking a spot away from somebody else and all that sort of stuff. Now, that stuff didn't really bother me, but something I saw earlier today that did make me feel a little bit bad was MMAfighting.com released the salaries for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read this?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Just have a guess of how much you think Mickey Gall made and how much CM Punk made for that fight. So,
you know,
I'll give you an example.
Honestly,
so,
like, I don't know where things start. I don't like making guesses like this, Kenny.
Oh, God. Okay, fine.
I have no idea where to start. Okay, fine. I'll play along.
Okay, so like Verdum got $375,000, and Travis Brown, who lost to him, got $120,000. So that's kind of like an example of where it is. CM Punk got paid $500,000. Mickey Gall got $30,000.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And for me, like, I get that CM Punk's the bigger star, but it's bullshit that he's paid that much compared to Mickey Gall. Now, again, from CM Punk's side, of course he should take that deal. Like, of course he should. He's getting offered to start an MMA career in UFC and make $500,000, even if he loses. Fuck, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, who's going to say no to that?
So from his point of view, he absolutely should say yes. But for me, like, from UFC's side, that's a fucking embarrassment that you're paying the loser $500,000 and the winner gets like $30,000.
Yeah.
Like, I just...
That's as lopsided, like, so, as the fight, just on the other side.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I think it's just one of those things where UFC, like, it was a publicity stunt and it was a business decision by Dana White. Did he get out of it what he wanted? I don't know. Maybe he did. Like, I think he probably knew CM Punk was going to lose the whole time, but, you know, they did those Evolution of Punks and all that sort of stuff. But,
well, that's the thing. I mean, that's part of it, right? Like, it's not just the fight that they're promoting and getting him in on. They're getting him in for a documentary. They're getting him in for all sorts of stuff. It does get more eyes on UFC. Like, I understand why Dana White would make that decision, because it's money, right? Like, seeing CM Punk's MMA debut, it was money, whether it was going to go well or not. So I get it. I don't know if I would consider it, like, an embarrassment, because, I mean, this could be exactly what they thought was going to happen, but, you know, it was about the journey and about the publicity of it.
This, I mean, I'm not saying this is the same thing. It's not the same thing. But this is the equivalent of WWE having a celebrity wrestle, essentially. Like, they can have the celebrity train a bit to look competent, but they're not really of the level to be in a wrestling match. And that's kind of what it is here. So it's just depending how, so, like, I don't know, you could, there's various, but then the difference is with wrestlers, all the people who ever really had a great match or a good match in wrestling, celebrity wise, were sports stars who kind of had sports backgrounds. You know, Dennis Rodman had matches in WCW, Floyd Mayweather had the thing with Big Show at WrestleMania. So I guess it all depends on how MMA fans see the CM Punk experiment. Do they see him like a Dennis Rodman type thing, or do they see him like a Snooki type thing? There's
yeah,
one,
I mean,
of the two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if it's quite the same, because he did train. He did make this his full-time job and everything, but I understand what you're saying, because, like, he made a UFC debut when he was absolutely not prepared to make a UFC debut.
And trust me, like, I just want to say, I am a big CM Punk fan, so I don't mean to say all this stuff is, like, to knock him at all. But I just think from UFC's side, it's, I don't know. I mean, but the key is, I assume that Punk is not going to fight in UFC again.
It doesn't sound that way. I mean, Dana White said he should probably fight somewhere else.
Which I assume would be Bellator, given that they, you know, they signed Ken Shamrock and Kimbo Slice and all those sort of fights. That kind of seems like the place that you would see CM Punk go to. Which would be good for him, but...
If he goes somewhere else on the pro level.
Yeah, true, because Punk did say in his post-fight interview, you know, he wanted to do this. He wasn't intending to start a UFC, but the offer came his way, so he's not going to turn it down. You know, I hope he does well, but it's difficult because, again, like, my only source of, like, knowing the background stuff is listening to guys like Dave Meltzer, and according to them, they're just saying he's too old.
Yeah.
And that when you start at that age... And you don't have a sports background, it's going to be next to impossible to get to it. Like, apparently, I never read this, but one of Punk's coaches was saying that the other week Punk was finally able to beat a brown belt.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. Like, I think I saw something like he had however many sparring sessions and he lost all but one of them or something.
And you're like, you shouldn't be saying that publicly about the guy that is about to go in and have a UFC fight. If you're his coach, you know,
yeah,
that's probably not the best way to build him up. But I think he will fight again. I don't. It all depends. Like, if they put him against guys like Mickey Gall, young upcoming guys with a point to prove, I think it's just going to keep ending quite badly. But
I don't think they're going to. This was a one-time experiment, right?
Oh, no, I don't mean like, from you. I don't mean in UFC.
Oh, okay.
I mean like if he goes somewhere else. And he fights a young, upcoming MMA fighter who has, you know, been training for 10 years or whatever. It's probably going to be quite a similar result for him.
Well, yeah, but if they've been training for 10 years, like, he needs to go up against other people who are new at this.
And that's, like, that's something I don't know. Are there people...
Everybody has to start somewhere.
They do, you know. I wonder if in pro MMA... Is there that many? Are there that many people that Punk could go up against that are brand new? That he would do.
Well, that's
know.
The question is whether he'll fight pro again or if he'll do some amateur things. I don't know enough about MMA to really speculate on all of that though. So
Batista's first fight was pro, wasn't it? When Batista did that MMA fight.
Honestly, I have no idea.
I'm googling it right now because Batista did one. He was one and done. When he fought, when was that? It was about 2012 or something. And he had, apparently his was a pro fight. So, but yeah, I guess we'll see where CM Punk goes from here. See what happens. Did you watch the rest of the show or did you just watch Punk's fight?
No, we were there for the whole show.
How interesting was Verdum and Brown?
What even was that? Like
that kick at the beginning though was superb.
It was, but like when he
kick to the face.
Yeah, but like when Brown was like, "Ow, my hand," or something. I was like, I looked at my pal who's like a big UFC fan, and I was like, "Is this even a thing? Like, can you do that? I feel like I'm watching wrestling right now." And he was like, "No, I've never seen this." He's like, "I mean, it's like he dislocated his finger or something." I was like, "What is this, Sin Cara? Like."
But that's essentially like that's a tap out. It's a verbal tap out.
It should be like because I was like, but you can't just you don't do that. Like you actually have to like either continue or not continue. You don't get to like take a break in this case. It was very very strange. We should probably move on to Backlash soon though, shouldn't we?
We should. I just did want to mention. I was just wanting to mention that Travis Brown thing that when he actually tried to say, "Please stop, my fingers hurting."
Yeah.
And the referee let him stop for a minute.
I was like, "What is the ref doing?" Honestly, like it was all very strange. It was a very strange show.
It was, but luckily Miocic won in the end from Alistair Overeem, who to me looked more like Neve Campbell in Scream running away than anything else. Was interested. It was a fun show. I enjoyed it. So Backlash is what we're here to talk about now for the rest of the show. I didn't watch the pre-show. Did you check it out?
I did check it out, only because I had a couple people tweet me and tell me that Apollo Crews was back to spelling things. And he was, and I was thrilled. So I was so happy that he spelled to Baron Corbin. And Apollo Crews fought Baron Corbin, and the match was pretty good. Honestly, it's a feud that I'd be okay with if it can bring some personality out of, I mean, Baron Corbin has some personality, but I think both of them could use something. And they had a decent, like, little feud in NXT, and I think them against each other, I would be fine with continuing, honestly. I think it could bring something out of Apollo, because Baron Corbin's deal is he just taunts everybody and thinks he's better. And if Apollo Crews has to fight from behind and kind of, like, prove that he's worth something and prove that he can have some fire. Like, I mean, even on the pre-show commentary, or not the commentary, but, like, the panel and everything, they're starting to talk about how Apollo Crews is just smiling all the time. And they were talking about it on Talking Smack, too. Like, it's becoming a talking point, which gives me hope that they're going to be doing something with that and using it as a character trait instead of just, holy cow, is he boring. So, yeah, I mean, the match isn't like you have to go back and watch it, but it was good.
Okay, there you go. So the pay-per-view from Richmond, Virginia, I was on my way to my friend's house to watch it. My friend decided to live 90 minutes outside of Vancouver, which is a fucking joy to travel to and back from. But when I was on the way, I got somebody sent me a message about, you know, Randy Orton's out. He's out of the match with Bray Wyatt. And I was like, wow, that's insane. And then somebody sent me the fact that Kane was potentially going to replace him. And I was like, oh, So I legitimately, on a bus to Coquitlam outside Vancouver, let out an audible, oh, for fuck's sake. to the point where a woman across from me looked over at me.
That's awesome.
That's how much Kane in a match with Bray Wyatt frustrated me. But we'll see how that gets on. So Backlash opened, 9/11 memorial graphic. Then we had Shane and Daniel Bryan come out. They both kind of, you know, ran down the show. And the opening match was the SmackDown Women's Championship match. Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella, Naomi, Alexa Bliss, Natalya, and Carmella. Alexa Bliss seemed to be inspired by Harley Quinn, and Nikki Bella seemed to be in Wonder Woman kind of attire.
They both looked incredible.
They did. There were a couple of sloppy spots, and I only say that because if it was the guys, we would call that out.
You should absolutely call out some of those sloppy spots, because Naomi and Carmella, oh boy, just
Natalya. I was involved in some of them. Like, let's not.
Yeah, yeah, not true.
Out of it. So there were some sloppy spots, but I think something that you said last week. You know, you were talking about that you weren't 100% thrilled with the whole six person thing, and I think one of the kind of downfalls to that is that. So, you know, in this match we have Natalya and Becky Lynch, who are excellent wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And then you have Nikki Bella, who's a very good, well, Nikki Bella, who's a good wrestler, Naomi, who's getting better, Alexa Bliss and Carmella, who are both good, but I mean, I don't think they're ready to win the title yet.
I think Alexa Bliss is better than Naomi, especially after this match.
You could make a point for that.
Like, Naomi the whole time to me just looked unsure of herself, and it was one of those situations where I could see her mentally thinking through the spots, right? Like, you can see it on her face even, that, you know, okay, now I have to do this, now I have to jump on the rope, now I have to do this. And it looked very awkward.
To be fair to her, she is a good athlete, and she did do some pretty good stuff in this match. Like, I don't think she was bad. You're right, Alexa Bliss did do a lot of good stuff here. But I think the key is, like, it's not six Becky Lynches here.
No.
You know, if you had six Becky Lynches, they could all kind of flow through it pretty easily. But so you need to account for that, I guess. But I think that I remember when the first where was the first pinfall? I think it was about 10 minutes in when Naomi pinned Alexa Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just kind of being like, fuck, like, we've had like 10 minutes of this match before one elimination's come out. And I liked that. Showed how far women's wrestling's come, that they've allowed the women to go that long without, you know, just making it a kind of finish.
Pin off transitional move, which is what would have happened, like, even maybe even a year ago in a multi-woman match like this. People get pinned off transitional moves, which there was kind of one of those with Carmella, like, covering Nikki Bella out of nowhere, but it made sense storytelling wise and it was still really good. And even with some of the sloppy spots, like that code of silence into the Alabama Slam was, like, really, really cool, but also really poorly executed on Carmella's part. But it was a cool spot. And I think that they managed to make everyone look pretty good. Like, I think Naomi kind of I don't know if she was just shaken up or what was going on, but
she was still in her recce from the night before.
Yeah. But I think overall, even the women who aren't necessarily as great at this or who don't have as much experience at this, I don't think they came out of it really looking bad. Carmella actually looked a lot more confident than she sometimes does. Even with, you know, a couple sloppy things in there, I think her personality came through really well. I like this Carmella as a heel situation. And I mean, the spot in the middle where, what is it, Nikki Bella pins Natalia off the TKO and then Carmella rolls up Nikki kind of immediately. I thought that was cool. Like, mm-hmm. It started with this, like, kind of stare down because, you know, Natalia and Carmella were maybe going to have an alliance against Nikki Bella. Nikki Bella actually played a pretty good baby face, you know? Like, I really enjoyed a lot of this, and I think the wrestling was very good for the most part, other than, you know, a couple spots. But I really, really liked it, and I really, really liked seeing the women get over 20 minutes of time to start the show. I was bummed that it did open the show only because I was on my way home from work while the match was happening, so I had to avoid Twitter and everything, and I was kind of hoping that the Usos and Hype Bros were going to open so that I could just start live. But I didn't. But, I mean, it was very, very cool to me to see the women get that much time, and then to see Becky Lynch win it. She would have been my pick to win it, but when we were down to the final four women, I honestly had no idea who out of the four of them was going to win, because I could have seen it going away.
My pick was Natalia. So then when she got beat, I was like, all right, okay. Because I figured they weren't going to give it to Nikki straight away. I didn't think they were going to give it to Becky straight away. I didn't think Carmella or Alexa were really ready. So I thought maybe they'd give it to Natalia as like a dark horse pick. But I'm with you. I thought Carmella was pretty decent here. She didn't do anything monumental move-wise, but that's what you should do when someone's just come up, is don't overexpose them.
Yeah,
just
the match
let
covered
them do some
it
stuff
up.
That looks good. Yeah, like, do some stuff that makes it look good.
Yeah, and I think everybody kind of did. So props to that, too. I mean, it didn't come off as, you know, sloppy. Only because we're analyzing it do we mention, like, the spots that weren't necessarily so good. But overall, I thought it was a great opener. And it seemed to get the crowd really revved up and ready to go. And then with Becky Lynch winning it, like, people were so behind Becky Lynch to win it. So it was good. It was really good.
Yeah, I liked when Carmella was... I like when Carmella eliminated Nikki Bella. I thought that was good. I also really liked Naomi's suicide dive, or springboard dive, sorry, that she did onto the floor. I thought that was a good spot. And then...
What I didn't like about that was David Otunga on commentary going, Naomi is the only woman I've ever seen do a springboard.
Fucking idiot.
Oh my gosh, she's so terrible. Like, do you watch the show?
But when it came down to Becky and Carmella, there was a moment where I thought Carmella was going to win it, and I was like, don't you dare put this belt on. And I was so angry at the mere thought, which is exactly how I should have been feeling.
Yeah, it was great, right? Like, I had the same, like, I, when it was down to Becky and Carmella, I was pretty sure that it was going to be Becky because of it being the two of them and not it being, like, Nikki and Carmella facing off at the end, which I like because they're kind of playing out that story, but they didn't have it just be, you know, that story ended up finishing the match. I just thought it was really clever, but I could have seen them putting it on Carmella after, like, cheating or being dastardly or something, and I would have been pissed, and I would have been supposed to be pissed. So I could have seen it going really any way, which is good, right? Like, that builds the drama of the match, and that makes it more exciting.
Yeah, I think the SmackDown Women's Division especially needs someone who is very good in the ring to carry the belt at the moment, and I think Becky Lynch is a good pick to do that. I liked her post-match promo calling herself Becky Balboa and her little bit with the belt about how she's going to carry it.
It's like, this is the first time I've ever held one of these, you know, how do I do it? Do I do it like this? Oh, that's why I built these boulder shoulders.
She was great. She was fantastic. I'll tell you what wasn't great, though, was Jagger Eaton, whoever the fuck this is.
Who knows?
Nickelodeon child who The Miz had a thing with.
That sounds really bad.
I have no fucking idea. I have no fucking idea.
The Miz was not, like, with the child, okay?
He was with him in a segment. Not as in with him in the biblical sense. Well, that wouldn't even be biblical because you can't. Anyway, they have a little thing where they go back and forth verbally. Nobody cares. Then we see Bray Wyatt slam a door onto Randy Orton's leg. Hence, you know, he's going to be out. Then we get the Hype Bros against the Usos and the to earn a spot in the finals of the tag title tournament. I almost jumped for joy when Jimmy and Jay came out in new gear and looked different. It's like they're one step away, because now they don't do that. They don't do their little kind of, you know,
their war dance to intimidate people. Which Alex on Twitter, the guy who does a lot of our logos for ITR, he has this thing about the Usos doing their little like war dance, and they do it first, like when they come out first, because if you do that, it's supposed to be to intimidate your opponent, right? Like, who are you chanting at if you come out first for a match? What in the world, Usos? And now that the Usos are heels, they're not even doing it. So it's really funny to me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they got rid of it. Like, yeah, like I like that they've got a different feel to them. The only thing I think they need to change now is get rid of the song and change it to something else that fits their characters more.
Yeah, it feels like they've really turned a corner and they've really changed their personalities. I will say about the gear, like, this was very distracting to me watching this match today, right?
Oh,
so I don't understand Jey Uso's pants, right?
Now, can I just, before you go into this,
okay,
do you have HD?
Yes.
Okay. All is explained. Continue.
Okay. So it's very, well, the network streams in HD. So it's very confusing that he's wearing basically tights. They're not like loose pants. Like, I mean, Jimmy's shorts are looser, right? But he's wearing like tights, but the crotch is like inches below his actual crotch, and it looks like it would impede movement. It's like I was very distracted by the crotch of his pants, and I didn't want to be looking at Jey Uso's crotch, but I kind of spent way too long looking at Jey Uso's crotch because I was like, who made these pants and thought that was a good idea? I just kind of expected them to split in the middle because there's a seam, right? It was very distracting.
So Sondra is induced by Jey Uso's pants, but during the match, what struck me was Zack Ryder has not changed his gear whatsoever to resemble him being in the Hype Bros. So Zack Ryder is still essentially just Zack Ryder. Mojo Rawley is just the pal that won't go away. And as I said on Twitter, and this is legitimate, I did go to primary school with a guy who stank of piss and used to steal people's things, and I liked him more than I liked Mojo Rawley.
Oh, just so shit. Although,
oh, so bad.
Like,
and then the bit where they're on the outside and like the Usos kind of try to bail, and then Zack Ryder, I think he like drop kicks them or something. He does something to them, and then Mojo comes out and starts trying to like run them over, and then Mojo and Zack just kind of are standing there, and Mojo starts trying to get hyped like he normally does, and it's just so crap.
No,
like,
he
doesn't get hyped.
He stays hyped.
Who cares? So, luckily, common sense prevailed and the Usos defeated the Hype Bros in about 10 minutes to advance to the tournament final. The match was forgettable, but it was fine. Like, it wasn't bad. It was fine.
It was fun enough. I mean, it was not important enough for me to watch it last night because I wanted to catch up to live after I got home from work. So, I did skip this entire match last night, but I watched it today before we recorded.
I mean, the fact that they had Ryder in most of the match was fine because he's decent.
Yeah, and I like Zack Ryder. And I think Mojo has maybe gotten marginally better, and also they keep him out of the ring more, and that's nice.
Which could be the reason he's marginally better.
Yeah, that could be. Like, Zack Ryder's actually pretty decent, and I just feel bad that he's sat over that shit.
See the fact that SmackDown is kind of low on the babyface side, especially with Smiley Spelly Man? Zack Ryder would be a good addition to that side. Like,
yeah.
Zack Ryder would be a good face on that show.
Unfortunately, SmackDown is low on everything, including tag teams, including baby faces, including people. So
true. But they do a very good job with what they have.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I really enjoyed this show.
Backstage, Renee Young's with Heath Slater and Rhino. Rhino has a Vote for Rhino t-shirt on. Slater thinks the cameras are off, so he speaks about how nervous he is. Rhino says they're still on air, and then Slater says, "You've been swerved!" And then Heath Slater shits himself and walks off.
Yep.
So, we have a video package for the Intercontinental Championship match with The Miz and Dolph Ziggler. There's footage of all the talk and smack stuff with Daniel Bryan and all that sort of thing. Dolph Ziggler comes out first, and then as he's coming to the ring, we cut backstage to The Miz venting to Daniel Bryan about being overlooked, underappreciated. He wants to renegotiate his contract, and The Miz just kind of tears Daniel Bryan a new one here, with Daniel Bryan just kind of having to take it. And it was pretty great. And then The Miz comes out, has this Intercontinental Championship match with Dolph Ziggler. I'll be honest, and this may get me some hate from people. I thought The Miz and Dolph Ziggler was the best match on this show.
Did you?
It was the best match on the show. I loved it. I thought the story was really good. I loved The Miz stealing Daniel Bryan's moveset. I thought that Dolph Ziggler was good as the guy trying to fight just to get a win. I really bought into it for whatever reason. And in the end, The Miz would get a win because Maryse sprayed moisturizer into Ziggler's eyes and Miz hit the skull crushing finale to retain the championship. This went like 18 minutes.
It was so good. I loved it too. I completely agree. Like, as soon as The Miz started like pulling out a surfboard hold and, you know, doing the drop kicks and everything, I was like, this is brilliant. Like, The Miz, give him shit all you want. The Miz is incredible.
Best heel in the company.
Best heel in the company. And actually, like, I mean, the line on Miz always is, well, he's a great character, but he's kind of shit in the ring, right? I don't think he's shit in the ring anymore either. I think he's gotten pretty good. He's not like AJ Styles great or anything, but I think he's gotten pretty good, especially at working his character into the matches and knowing what he has to do with all that. I am really, really into The Miz. And I definitely audibly yelled yes when he retained over Dolph Ziggler, because I thought that he would, but I wasn't 100% sure. Like, I wasn't super confident. The only outcome on this show that I was super confident about was the Usos going over the Hype Bros, right? So that one I was pretty sure. But yeah, like, I'm really glad that The Miz is still the champion. I'm really glad Maryse cheated for him without it being a super convoluted thing. I think they did it really well, because Ziggler was in the rope. She just like quickly took something out, sprayed it in Ziggler's face. And then The Miz wasn't even necessarily in on this, right? Like, it's like when she pretended to sprain her ankle at ringside that one time, and Miz like carried her off because he thought she was, you know, hurt in storyline. And then she was like, oh no, I was just acting. And then The Miz was like, that's brilliant. I love you. Because he's not necessarily in on all of her dastardly deeds, but he does absolutely support the fact that she's being dastardly to support him. And I just love them as a pair. I think they're fantastic. I don't know. I really love everything about this. And I mean, I don't know if it was my favorite match of the night, but there are a few that are up there, and I don't think it's wrong of you to say that this was the best one. Like, I think it was fantastic. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, it was definitely my favorite. The only thing I think they could have done to just make me even more into it was I really wanted The Miz to win with the Yes Lock. Like, I really wanted to win.
Oh, that would have been so good.
But I get why they didn't do it. Now, the thing is, let's address it before we move on. They are again teasing Daniel Bryan and The Miz. So I'm going to divert to you, Mrs. SmackDown. What's the payoff?
I'm not sure. It's interesting, right? I mean, in an ideal world where brains heal and people get cleared and you can actually have a great comeback story, yeah, I would love to see Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. I don't think that's going to happen. If it does, I will be delighted, but I don't think it's going to happen. What I think a great payoff to this would be for Daniel Bryan to call, and I don't even know who this would be. Like, I don't know, because I'm thinking of people on the NXT roster right now, and there's no one that really fits this necessarily for me, but for Daniel Bryan to maybe call someone up or call someone in to fight for him and to fight The Miz.
You know, I have a prediction. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, Bryan returning would be great. I actually like the fact that this is a fresh take on the authority wrestler thing, but this is a babyface authority figure and a heel wrestler. Like, we don't really see that right now.
Well, we do in NXT, but
Sandra.
I'm just saying.
We're talking main roster.
No, but you said we don't see that. We do see it. You just don't watch it.
You're being pedantic, but okay. It's on NXT, but it's not on the main roster. So on the main roster, we've not seen it for a while.
True.
So it's nice to see. I think what we could see in the next couple of weeks, and I wouldn't be surprised, is to see Daniel Bryan bring Brian Kendrick to SmackDown for a shot at the Intercontinental Championship because it fits in with the CWC thing. Brian would give his friend one more shot, and it doesn't need to be like a long-term program, but I think it would be a fun way to keep The Miz going for a little while. And I think The Miz as the IC champ is great, and I don't think he should be losing that belt anytime soon. And I think that if Daniel Bryan was to bring someone in, that'd be great.
That would be the perfect choice, now that you say it. Like, because I kind of just had it in my head that Brian Kendrick was probably going to Raw for the Cruiserweight division. Like, I don't know if, but he hasn't been listed. Has he been listed in those promos where they say, like, Noam Dar and Cedric Alexander are coming to Raw?
No, he's not on it.
Okay. So, oh, man, that's perfect. Yes, bring Brian Kendrick in to fight The Miz.
So, yeah, we could see that happen, and then... I don't know what the long term program is, but I'm really enjoying it right now, and I hope they continue it and keep me intrigued by it.
I do think it's a little funny that Daniel Bryan was like, "I'm not allowed to, you know, talk about The Miz. I'm not allowed to be in segments with The Miz." And then on SmackDown, we saw him in a segment with The Miz, and then now he's directly interacting with The Miz again before The Miz's music hits. I kind of like the whole like Miz antagonizes him, and then you hear his music hit backstage right before he comes out through the curtain too.
Yeah,
it's kind of so a cool production thing. I really like it. I don't know. I'm totally into this.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying it. The Miz Daniel Bryan thing is one of the most exciting things on SmackDown. The thing that comes out of this match for me is I don't know what you do with Dolph Ziggler, because you can't really turn him heel because the heel side is quite heavy and the babyface side is quite quiet. But I don't know what you do with him when he has just come off two pay-per-views losing a WWE title match and an IC title match. So, but you know what? I think it was totally the right decision here for The Miz to win. The Miz is hot. Dolph Ziggler's not. That's the way it is. So
I think Dolph Ziggler and Bray Wyatt are in kind of similar situations right now, where you put them in feuds and they lose.
Indeed. So up next we get Bray Wyatt coming out, and Greg Hamilton says, you know, Randy Orton's injured, he's not going to be able to compete. Bray Wyatt insists he gets an official 10 count. Charles Robinson does it, raises Bray Wyatt's hand. Wyatt's about to leave, and he's announced he'll be competing in a no-holds-barred match against, and then Kane comes out. To be fair, this was not as bad as I thought it was going to be. The no-holds-barred thing did make it more fun. I did enjoy Bray Wyatt doing the Orton thing when he was on the outside. That made me laugh.
This match, more than anything else, just made me think Bray Wyatt needs to be a fiery babyface. Like, when he did the running senton on the announce table... That was awesome, right? Like, that was so awesome. Why is he not a fight? Like, that one match that he had where he tagged with Roman Reigns, where he was a babyface, and everyone was like, maybe Bray Wyatt can be rehabilitated. A lot of people were asking me on Twitter after this all went down, like, what can Bray Wyatt do to be rehabilitated? Turn him babyface and give him wins. That's what he can do to be rehabilitated. If he just keeps telling stories and losing... It just makes me sad. But I think the match itself was really, really good.
It was fun. It was fun. Yeah, and I agree with you. Long term, Bray Wyatt should be a babyface. They did quite a cool thing where they did some outside spots, the choke slams through the table that Kane set up for, and then eventually the table broke on Kane, and fans chanted "Holy shit!" But
that was the senton thing.
Yes, it was. I'm very tired. So I'm trying to remember. See, I don't write notes down, which is a problem. I really should probably start doing that. But anyway, that's another discussion. But in the end, when Bray Wyatt seemed to have it all in the bag, Randy Orton limped out towards the ring, entered, did an RKO, left, Kane chokeslam Wyatt and pinned him. A lot of people are going crazy that Bray Wyatt lost this match. And usually I would be in that corner. I actually didn't mind it because it was part of the story. And Randy Orton hit the RKO out of nowhere, which is supposed to be the move that if he hits it, you can't do anything. So I'm okay with it, you know, as long as Bray Wyatt is in the Randy Orton feud continues, then it's fine with me. But I get why people are so frustrated about it. If Kane had beaten him with no interference, that would have been a different story. But I guess for me, like, I don't think the Bray Wyatt character is that great right now. So
it's
I don't really think he needs to be protected the way he used to be. Like, I don't think the character deserves to be protected the level it used to be, because it's not that good.
Well, I think it depends on where you're coming at it from. Like, did they have kind of a sure thing with Bray Wyatt being a really, really different thing? Did they have someone who could be really, really special? Yeah, they did. Did they absolutely run it into the ground? Yeah, they did. and we're in that point where he's kind of run into the ground. And even I, like, because you know how big of a Bray Wyatt fan I am, like, even I wasn't super bothered, and I just kind of rolled my eyes and went, well, okay, like, that happened. And I can't get too upset about it anymore, because I spent years getting so upset about it. And I,
my, like, favorite comment that you made on Twitter was, you said, at least it's not the Undertaker.
At least it's not the Undertaker.
That made my night. Such a good,
it's like,
comment.
I really need to stop wearing my Bray Wyatt shirt when he has matches, because he just loses.
Yeah,
but I mean,
you're the jinx. But yeah, no, I think you're right, though, because I think you've hit the nail on the head, because somebody asked me the same thing about, you know, what does Bray Wyatt need to recover from this? And I just said, well, a win over Randy Orton is clearly what he needs to have. But I think you're right. Like, the babyface turn is probably what it needs to be long term. Because that's just, you know, like you said, the one night of this year where he has been on fire was when he was a babyface. And, you know, because people keep asking as well, you know, what about Luke Harper and Eric Rowan? And I kind of feel like that ship's now sailed. You know, they were all together, they broke up, they got back together. It wasn't really that great when they got back together. I just don't know how much longer. I feel like if we keep going back to this whole Wyatt family well, and, like, nothing advances with them, you know, they're just the same Wyatt family they were before.
Well, see, yeah, and that's an interesting point, because I don't know that the problem is the family. I feel like Bray is better when he has people that he's controlling. At least heel Bray Wyatt is better when he has people that he's controlling, or that he can exert influence over, or something like that, because that gives him a purpose, right? And that, like, when they were feuding with the New Day, I was into the Wyatts versus the New Day, and it just got cut so short because of the draft. And I think that was a real shame, because I think that the Wyatts were actually starting to do something really, really interesting there, right? But, I mean, what you say about if they're together and nothing advances, then that's the problem. And I think that's the problem with Bray Wyatt in a nutshell, is that nothing seems to advance, because he doesn't react to the losses, all of the losses, all of the many, many losses. And when he wins, it's cool. I mean, I do still find myself getting into Bray Wyatt in his matches, and, you know, sometimes in the promos too, because his delivery is great. But now when he does, you know, smoky promos backstage, they're too long, and I'm just like, but you're not. Like, you call yourself a god, and lines like, you know, he delivered on SmackDown something about, you know, Randy Orton is just going to be flesh stuck to the teeth of the Eater of Worlds. That's great stuff, but it's not going to pay off. And Bray Wyatt's not reacting whether he wins or loses, so that's a problem. He just keeps saying that he's a god. He is the new face of fear. He's the Eater of Worlds. What does that mean, and how is that going to play out? Because if you don't advance and you don't change as a character, then you get stagnant and you get boring. And while I'm still into Bray Wyatt, like, I was into Bray Wyatt versus Kane, actually. I really enjoyed the match quite a bit. But what's the payoff? And is it going to matter on SmackDown that he lost? And I don't think he's going to react to having lost. I think he's just going to still be spooky Bray Wyatt. And that's what kind of breaks my heart about it, because he could be so good and he could be so much more. But I think I'm starting to be defeated in the Bray Wyatt camp, to the point where I'm just like, maybe that's not how they see him, and maybe it's not going to go anywhere. And I think that's really unfortunate, because I think they had something really special, but I don't know, maybe we're past that time until something changes. And that's why I think a babyface turn would be the only way to really rehabilitate him fully, because that would be a change in character. We've seen with the Usos, right? Like, turning heel has made them instantly more interesting, pants choices aside. Bray Wyatt as a babyface would be a new direction for the character, and I think that it would be a really good idea, because he works so well as a babyface, and I really want to see it. And, I mean, part of me does still want to see Luke Harper with Bray Wyatt. Maybe having him in a tag situation, maybe having the Wyatts in the tag division wouldn't be the worst idea in the world, right? Like, something needs to change, though. Something needs to change, and I don't know what
something
it is.
Something needs to change. Because the thing is, Harper and Rowan were great when they were, you know, his henchmen, and they were, when they were fighting the Usos on pay-per-view and all that sort of stuff. That was great. But for, I think the thing that killed it was when they broke off in 2014, you know, and Harper had his IC title thing, and then Rowan had the stairs match. But then they got back together, and, like, I don't know if there's one thing they did when they got back together that I could even name to you. really. There's nothing. So for me, it's like, maybe just move on, maybe do something else. And I think the thing with, it goes back to the thing that Jim Ross used to say that I kind of just disagree with. When he was talking about it, it was when Rusev was having the feud with John Cena. And he was saying, you know, well, Rusev is enhanced just by working with John Cena. No, that's not how it works.
Mm-mm.
That's not how wrestling works. Like, if you point to anybody in the past and how they became big stars, they beat big stars. Bret Hart won his first WWF championship by beating Ric Flair and tapping him out in the middle of the ring. Hulk Hogan defeated Andre the Giant in front of 93,000 people. Steve Austin beat Shawn Michaels. You know, all these people beat somebody big from
the Undertaker past. Beat everyone.
The Undertaker...
At WrestleMania, though. No, and this isn't me having a dig, actually. This is me agreeing with you, right? Because what made The Undertaker such a mystique at WrestleMania? He won. He beat
it. Exactly. And the thing with... I'm glad you brought Undertaker up, because I was going to bring it up, and you made me, I was forgetting about it. The thing with Bray Wyatt, and this is... You know, I'm going to obviously defend The Undertaker here, but, like, the problem with Undertaker Bray Wyatt was not the fact that The Undertaker won. That wasn't the problem with that match. The problem was that the Bray Wyatt character did not react to that loss. Had that loss been the catalyst for a story advancement and for Bray Wyatt to become more of a monster or whatever, great, that's fine, you're telling a story. Kurt Angle back in 2002 was a happy-go-lucky heel who was a bit goofy and all that sort of stuff. And then... one night he lost, I can't remember where he lost, but he lost on a pay-per-view. The next night he snapped, came out, broke Scotty Too Hotty's ankle, became a submission machine who was angry and wanted to kill people, you know, and that was what he did. And he developed an edge. But Bray Wyatt lost to The Undertaker, never mentioned it. Ever. You know, and that's the stuff with Bray Wyatt that's really frustrating. And he never would, you know, if he ever beat people, it would be like, you know, when he beat John Cena, he never pinned him, he just threw like a thing on top of him in the Last Man Standing match and Cena didn't get up. You know, that's the only way he was able to beat John Cena. So with Bray Wyatt,
and then walking out of the cage after the scary demon child or whatever.
Yes, that's true. The other thing I want to say, and this is just for me, I think it's kind of unacceptable that WWE still promoted the Randy Orton Bray Wyatt match on this show going into it. They knew about a week before that they couldn't have the match. I think it's really poor form to do that, because this is the first SmackDown pay-per-view. You know, whether people like Randy Orton or not, Randy Orton was probably the biggest star on the show. You know, he's the only guy that's main evented WrestleMania multiple times. He's a big, big star, and I don't think you should sell pay-per-views on someone who you know can't compete. And I don't think Kane is a... If you had a great replacement, great, but you didn't, you had Kane, so...
Did they know that he wasn't going to be able to compete that early on? Like, weren't they hoping that he was going to get cleared or something before...
They were hoping, but they didn't know for sure, even up until the weekend. They had Kane replace Orton on house shows this weekend, so they knew for at least a week that he might not be able to wrestle. They've known for at least a couple of days that he definitely couldn't wrestle, and I just think that that's something... I've never been okay with that kind of false advertising. It's just something I don't like. I think it's unfair to the consumers. You know, if you go and see... I've been to see the theater shows before, and they'll say, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this person is not going to be performing tonight. It's an understudy. If you want to get refunds at the door, on you go. John Cena, if he doesn't make house shows, they announce to the crowd that John Cena's not going to be there, and you can get refunds at the merch stand up to the end of the first match. So I just think to advertise around the Orton pay-per-view when you don't have him is poor. And I know he came in and did something, that was fine, but for those fans, I thought it was a little bit unfair.
Yeah, I think it's tricky because, like, storytelling-wise, they're kind of backed into a corner. So, I mean, they had to play off the injury on the show, and you don't want to, like, not advertise it, and then... Or you don't want to advertise that Randy Orton's not going to be there, but then also, I don't know. It's tricky, right? Like, just because of the nature of WWE and what they do, but I understand what you're saying.
Then we got the finals of the Tag Team Championship Tournament, Heath Slater and Rhino against the Usos, and this went on for about 10 minutes or so. It got fun towards the end especially, and in the end, Rhino performed the gore on Jimmy Uso, and Slater pinned Jimmy. Heath Slater and Rhino became the Tag Team Champions of SmackDown. The fans were really going crazy for it. They were happy. Fun post-match interview where Slater was thanking Shane and Brian, and he knew there was a mistake when he wasn't drafted and all that sort of stuff. Here's the thing I just want to say quickly about this. Some people are going to be really happy that Heath Slater and Rhino are tag champions. Some people are going to be like, why are Heath Slater and Rhino the tag champs? But what I think they did, which is clever, is that 2 months ago, Heath Slater meant nothing in WWE. He was nothing. And in 2 months, they've managed to take him from that and make him one of the most popular acts on the show and become a champion. And I think that's pretty commendable. So
Heath Slater's quest for a contract has been the best story on SmackDown.
For me, it's tied with Brian and The Miz, but yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, Brian and The Miz are definitely up there, but I think Heath Slater's thing has been going on longer, but...
True.
I mean, the fact that it's up there with Brian and The Miz, right? Like, those are two really good stories that have been going on in SmackDown, and, I mean, it's funny because from what I saw you saying on Twitter and everything, like, you were just flabbergasted that this happened. I think you were pretty sure the Usos were going to win, right?
Yeah, and I wasn't even flabbergasted. It wasn't like an angry flabbergasted. Like, I love Heath Slater and Rhino. Like, I was laughing to my friend. I was like, Rhino is a tag team champion in 2016. What's going on? But, you know, like, the thing is, like, again, it kind of goes back to that thing of the Usos taking out American Alpha. I really liked because it stopped American Alpha having to win the belt straight away. There's a chase to be had. I think my only thing with this is that I'm not too sure if the Usos, when they've just turned heel and just got a bit of a, you know, mean streak about them losing straight away like this, was the best move. But I think that the overall kind of positive of it is that you've got a really popular tag team here and they're the champions. So, you know, it's cool.
Yeah,
I'm sure they
really
can recover
like
from it. And I wouldn't be 100% shocked if tomorrow night on SmackDown the Usos win the titles.
It wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me at all because then American Alpha can come back and feud for the titles. Like, I mean, I don't get the impression that Heath Slater and Baby Rhino are going to be long-term tag team champions, right? But I think going into this, I really didn't know who was going to win. I probably would have predicted the Usos. In fact, I would have predicted the Usos because I wrote down for myself predictions just beforehand just so that I didn't, like, renege on them and say, oh, yeah, I knew this was going to happen, right? I would have predicted the Usos, but I wasn't super sure because Heath Slater's, you know, quest for the contract or whatever seems to be the big story. And Heath Slater really hasn't been doing the free agent stuff so much since he got put into the tag tournament. Like, he hasn't really been showing up on Raw. He hasn't been talking about how he's not signed. He's been more like, I need to get a SmackDown contract. He's not still angling for a Raw one, right? Because he had the SmackDown opportunity. So I think the logical payoff eventually was to give him a contract. I could have seen it going either way. I could have seen him losing this and then them kind of drawing out the free agent thing and whatnot, but I think, I don't know, I think this is just really fun, and it was definitely a feel-good moment, and Beulah, we're getting a double wide, baby. Like, I mean, it's just great stuff, right? And so I'm glad that Heath Slater's on SmackDown. I'm really, really glad, because as much as I love the free agent stuff, like, I kind of want him on SmackDown, right? Like, because he fits in here, and I really, really like Heath Slater. I love Rhino. Rhino's so adorable, and he was like the perfect adorable baby Rhino in this match, and I think they worked really well together. They had great teamwork, and I don't know, all of this was really fun, and I'm happy with the result. I think it would have been a good story to tell too if the Usos had beaten them and, you know, become utter dickheads, but I think, you know,
there's still time to do that.
There's still time to do that, and this way we, like, it seems like they wanted to go to the next step and Heath Slater getting his contract. Now he has his contract. I think that's good. Because, like, if you play it out too long sometimes, you know, then it can go on too long and it can get stale and it can kind of jump the shark. And I'm glad that they're progressing the story before it gets old and before it gets stale and they're moving on to the next phase of things. So I don't know. I'm happy with this and I'm interested to see where they go with it. Like you say, I wouldn't be shocked if the Usos win it very, very soon. Because I don't think American Alpha are going to win from Heath Slater and Rhino. Because, like, it wasn't that the whole point of taking American Alpha out in the first place? Like, not wanting to have those stories conflict?
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. Like you said, they don't have a big tag team division or a big women's division or anything like that. But they're making the use of the people they've got. And that's sometimes where the best television can come out of because they're forced to do so. Main event time is AJ Styles against Dean Ambrose for the WWE World Championship. In the end, AJ Styles would, when the referee was down, kick Dean Ambrose in the balls. So we're all figuratively living through AJ Styles and do the Styles Clash to win the championship. I thought that overall, it was a fun match. It was one of Dean Ambrose's better matches. For me, the ending was a tiny bit anticlimactic because I actually thought that somebody was going to come in and restart the match because AJ had cheated. But apart from that, like, it was good. I enjoyed it. I thought AJ did really well. Dean Ambrose still did some of the stupid stuff that annoys me, like his stupid clothesline thing and do-si-do, which they infuriate me beyond belief. But I did like how at the end of the match, AJ Styles basically went up the ramp to avoid staying in the ring and getting like "you deserve it" chants and all that sort of stuff. He kind of was clever enough to do that.
Yeah.
And I think overall it's a good thing that AJ Styles has the championship. Whether you like Dean Ambrose or not, I'm not saying that Dean Ambrose is a bad wrestler or whatever. You know, if his comedy works for you, that's great. But I just don't think he was an effective WWE champion. You know, SmackDown needs to have a sort of really hot champion, and AJ Styles, I think, is the guy to do it. But what did you think, Sandra? Because you're obviously not a huge Dean Ambrose fan going into this. You know, it's last month Dean Ambrose had a good build to a match, and then the match didn't deliver. How did this match work out for you?
Oh, this match was way better than the one last month, right? Like, Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles. Actually, I thought this was a good match. I thought this was Dean Ambrose's best match since Triple H at Roadblock. Because it seems like whenever Dean Ambrose has something to sink his teeth into and gets pushed in the ring, like when he is made to be better, then he can actually step it up and be okay. Like, I mean, the stuff that infuriates you about Dean Ambrose infuriates me about Dean Ambrose, maybe even more so. Like, I really don't like his matches overall. But I think he actually was showing some fire in this match. He actually seemed to care about something a little bit. And that's where Dean Ambrose really falls short for me a lot of the time in his character and in his matches. He doesn't really seem to put a lot of effort in, and he doesn't seem to care what's going on. And I mean, in this match, AJ Styles pushed him, and it was long and it was good. Like, it's not even just like it was an okay match because AJ Styles carried Dean Ambrose. I think Dean Ambrose held his own in here, and I think he actually, you know, when he gets fired up about something and actually looks like he wants to have a match, then he actually can have decent enough matches given the right opponent. This was absolutely the right decision. I'm really glad that nobody restarted the match. That didn't even cross my mind at the end of the show. Like, if they're going to restart this match, why wouldn't they restart the Intercontinental Championship match? Why wouldn't they restart anything anytime anybody cheats, right? Like, I hate when they restart matches for stuff like that. So I think this was absolutely the right decision. I think AJ kicking Dean Ambrose in the balls totally makes sense. I mean, the build to this has been, you crotched me on the rope and thought it was funny, and I don't think it's funny, right? Like, I wasn't as thrilled to the build of this one because of that stuff, because it seemed like wacky Dean Ambrose was spreading to AJ Styles, which should never happen. But I thought the match delivered. It delivered more than I thought it was going to. And I really like AJ kind of cheating to win. And then I think in an interview afterward, I think they asked him, like, is it tainted? Like, is your legacy tainted now because you had to cheat to win the WWE Championship? He's like, no, I'm a winner. I find a way to win. I found a way to win. I'm the champion. And that's exactly what AJ Styles should say. And that's exactly the character of AJ Styles, right? And I think it's perfect. And I think he looks really, really good with that belt. And I'm looking forward to him as champion because I think he's going to be way more effective as a champion than Dean Ambrose, who almost forgot his belt in a taxi the day after he won it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me at the end of the match was I just felt that the end of the match was a little bit anticlimactic. And then that was the only reason I thought maybe they're going to do some sort of restart thing. But yeah, you are right. If I'd logically thought about it, then they would have restarted the other match. So I guess the question now is where AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose go from here. For AJ Styles, if you don't like spoilers, then I need you to turn off the podcast now or stop listening for like 60 seconds.
Do I need to stop listening? What's happening?
We need to talk about it. It's basically, John Cena is being advertised for No Mercy.
Yeah.
That is the news. So if you put two and two together, I'm assuming AJ Styles will defend the WWE World Championship against John Cena at No Mercy. That's what I would assume this all goes. Is that where you see it going? Do you think Dean Ambrose gets another pay-per-view match out of it? Or do you think this should be a one and done? I mean, I kind of feel like it's a one and done thing, but maybe I'm wrong. Or do we get a three-way with Cena and Ambrose? Where do you see it going for Mr. Styles?
Oh, I don't know why they would make it a three-way.
Like, Dean Ambrose gets his rematch.
Yeah, Dean Ambrose gets his rematch, but why would Cena get to be in there?
because he's John Cena and he returns and,
and
wants
he
to fight
gets
people.
Matches. Yeah.
Have you watched John Cena in WWE before?
I have.
Remember he had the worst year of his life when he like got a bell and beat Brock Lesnar? But
oh,
it was still
gosh.
The worst year of his life.
It was the worst year of his life. Yeah, what a life, right? Go have your eternally clean house, and I'm so looking forward to John Cena and Total Bellas right now. But
you can watch every Wednesday on the E! Network starting October 5th.
Just ask Daniel Bryan, who plugs it incessantly, which is so funny. Like, I feel like backstage somebody told Daniel Bryan, you really need to like promote Total Bellas, and he's just doing it to have a dig. Like,
yeah. I'm going to make you regret asking me to plug this.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love it so much. But as far as AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose go, WWE loves their rematch clause, right? So there probably will be a rematch. I don't know if that's going to happen on SmackDown, just to get it out of the way. And I mean, it might not happen on this next SmackDown.
That wishful thinking?
I don't know. They've done it before.
But would you rather the Dean Ambrose kind of chase for the title end? Like, would you rather just get the rematch out of the way, have AJ beat him and move on?
Yeah, because I would prefer Dean Ambrose not be in the title scene.
Yes, but, you know, it's funny. I think.
I mean,
Dean
I don't
Ambrose
know. It depends what they're going to do. It depends if they want to do a longer build to the AJ Styles John Cena rematch, right? Because I don't know if they're going to want to do it at No Mercy, or if they're going to want to do it at Survivor Series. I don't know what comes after that.
Yeah, it's No Mercy, and then it's Hell in a Cell for Raw, and then it's Survivor Series.
SmackDown doesn't have Hell in a Cell this year.
Yeah, you don't have to review that one.
I'm so excited right now. Okay, sorry. I didn't know that. That was such excellent news.
Maybe Robert can come back and give me a night off. but no, so I actually think that the three-way is the way to go next month, because I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting to have Ambrose gets his rematch and then Cena's involved, and then you've kind of got the story to build of like AJ Styles has got to compete with two men, and then he can beat Dean Ambrose, which means that, you know, him and Cena can keep going, because Cena's not going to take multiple losses or anything, so it's a way to have AJ keep the title another month. That's how I would do it, within the confines of how they would present it. That's what I would like to see, just because I'd like to see AJ Styles at least get a month's reign with it, if not more. But
yeah, I mean, I would like it to be a little bit longer. Maybe I'm almost hoping that the Dean Ambrose thing plays out just to put off the John Cena thing, but I mean,
I mean, the thing is, if he wins at No Mercy, then the next pay-per-view for them is Survivor Series, so he would automatically hold it another month and a half.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, overall, I guess the title scene's interesting, because after John Cena, like, if AJ Styles was to keep the championship, who else have you got for AJ? Randy Orton, I guess, would be the next one.
Yeah, I mean, it'd probably be Randy Orton, which I'd be fine with, honestly.
Yeah, he's been interesting the last couple of months, so fair play.
It's been interesting, and I think AJ Styles and Randy Orton could have killer matches.
Yeah, they would have a great match. Dean Ambrose, for the sake of objectivity and trying to not just completely talk about or disdain for his character, what would you like to see Dean Ambrose do next? If it were up to you, you are Sondra, and you are taken to Stanford, and you are put on the creative team. What do you want Dean Ambrose to do next?
Be main event exclusive?
I knew you were going to do that.
well, I mean, you just gave me all the power.
For me, like, the thing with Dean Ambrose is there is good elements to him that, you know, we don't talk about as often as we maybe should. Like, he can be good. You know, when he's done promos in the last couple of months or last couple of weeks that have been good. Some of the Ziggler stuff that he did was good. I thought he was effective in the AJ promo that he did on this past week's SmackDown. But I personally just don't think he fits with the wacky comedy. Like, Dean Ambrose strikes me as the sort of guy, and I'm not saying he does this, but I'm just saying Dean Ambrose, the guy, strikes me as someone who goes out, drinks a lot, takes drugs, has a lot of sex, and doesn't really give a fuck about what anybody thinks. That guy does not match up for me with zany hairspray comedy and do-si-dos.
Well, that's the problem with Dean Ambrose, is he's just so inconsistent. So, and it's hard for me to think, like, what would I want to see Dean Ambrose do? Because I could see maybe Dean Ambrose going into a program with someone like The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship, if you wanted to keep Dean Ambrose at, you know, like in a championship hunt or something like that. But do I really want to see Dean Ambrose versus The Miz? Not really.
You could have Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin.
You know what? Let's do that.
I was joking, but yeah, sure. Let's
no,
do that.
I'm not even kidding. Let's do that, because then I won't have to watch it too much. Like, I'll watch it, obviously, but it won't be a feud that could be, like, neither one of them seems like they would be absolutely fantastic in a feud with somebody else right now, because, I mean, I feel like The Miz could tell more interesting stories than wacky Dean Ambrose stories, and I just... Why not? Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin. Book it. It's not going to be good, but...
And then we've got Luke Harper is apparently now in the Performance Center working out before he comes back, so I don't know if he does come back to SmackDown or not. I guess we'll see what happens there. Sandra, as we kind of wrap up here, you don't like to do ratings, so we always do the thumbs. Where would you put your thumbs for Backlash? Up, middle, or down?
Oh, thumbs up. Backlash was good. Backlash was really good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised. Going into it, I was kind of like, oh, this might not be a great show, especially with Randy Orton being taken out as well, but I thought they did a good job.
I don't think there was a bad match on the show. And you know what nobody was saying after Backlash?
What?
I feel so cheated that we didn't get a full 3-hour show. Nobody was saying that, right? Backlash ended early. And when the main event match started at like 10:05 or something like that, and I was like, are there going to be shenanigans, or is this actually just going to end early? And it actually just ended early, and it felt like a complete show that told a cohesive narrative that had really like good to great wrestling on it. And it was excellent. And maybe they can learn from that, because not everything needs to be 4 hours long. You can tell a good story and have a decent length show, and it can be delightful, and we can go off the air with a happy feeling instead of, oh boy, I'm just so tired.
Agreed. It was a good show. It was effective. It was fun. And I think the only thing that comes out of it is that I think they do need another strong babyface. Wherever they get that from, I don't know, whether it's Bray Wyatt or somebody from NXT, but they need somebody.
Yeah, they need somebody. I mean, SmackDown's still building its identity, but I felt like Backlash was a good step, right? Because now we have tag champs, we have a women's champion, I put on Twitter, I'm basically in love with all of the champions for one reason or another. There's not someone holding a belt on SmackDown right now that I'm like, oh, I'm tired of them, or I'm bored of them, or they shouldn't have it, or, you know, there's no reason. I really, really like the layout of SmackDown going forward right now, and I'm looking forward to Tuesday.
And just as we kind of go off there, just to clarify, the three male heavyweight champions in WWE are Shinsuke Nakamura, Kevin Owens, and AJ Styles.
What a world.
What a time to be alive. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
That's it from Sandra and I. We will be back on Wednesday probably to talk about SmackDown with the SmackDown summary. David and I will be back tomorrow night with the Raw rundown to, I guess, have more build for Clash of Champions. So we will see you then. Thanks for listening. Go to insidetheropes.co.uk to buy tickets for Jim Ross and Jim Cornette in London or Cody Rhodes in Manchester, and go to squaredcircle.com to buy your Inside the Ropes t-shirt. Thank you to everyone who has so far, and yeah, enjoy. We will see you soon. Dean Ambrose is no longer your World Heavyweight Champion.
Yay! You are breathing pretty heavily into your microphone right now.
Is this better?
Yes.
See, it's difficult because sometimes breathing into it makes me sound better, and sometimes it makes me sound like a pedophile. So
you were definitely edging toward pedophile there.
Do not put that in as a blooper.